If you try to think about equality of the people you meet and also that you know in this life, what would you be able to say about them as a whole? And I'm not speaking about saved and unsaved here. The quality of the people you meet and know in this life. What would you be able to say about them as a whole? Well, your answer just may be, like my answer is, that they are just plain old ordinary people. They may have some good qualities about them, and they also may have some bad qualities about them. But by and large, most everyone we meet and everyone we know are just plain old ordinary people. Well, the question is, what about the people of the Bible then, if that's true, in our lives? What about the people of the Bible? Can that be said about them also? Maybe early on in your walk, you may have idolized these people, looked up to them as extraordinary, like this group as a whole. They were extraordinary. God used these extraordinary people back then. Abraham, Moses, David from the Old Testament, Matthew, Peter, and Paul from the New Testament. But the more you grow, and the more you grew in the Lord, and the more you got to know them, the more you saw that they were just plain old ordinary people also, who God used in an extraordinary way. Abraham, when called, was no one special at all. Some people think, oh, Abraham was this awesome, faithful guy that God looked down, seemed, oh, this guy I can work with. This is not true at all. Even after his call, Abraham's faith at times resembled your average pagan. We saw that over and over. And the same can be said about his son Isaac, as we shall see tonight. Moses, who stumbled in speech, was a murderer. He killed an Egyptian in Egypt. David may have started out very heroic, but as time went on, he also was a murderer, caused one to be killed. Well, what about the New Testament characters? What can we say about them? Well, Matthew was the lowest of the low. He was a tax collector. These people were like ostracized back then. If you were a tax collector, they didn't even want to look at you. Most tax collectors were just outright thieves. It's whatever they can get off you, they got off you and gave the Romans the rest. Peter was a lowly fisherman who denied the Lord three times, even as following him and knew him, when he knew him well. And when we meet Paul, he has the blood of the saints on him in that story with Stephen there. He has the blood of the saints on him. And even at the time of his conversion, what was he doing? He was on his way to murder some saints up in Syria. This is what he was doing. As I said a moment ago, the more we got to know these people in the Bible, the more you can see. These were just plain old ordinary people. But let me add this. God used these people in extraordinary ways. Extraordinary ways. And as we shall see in chapter 7, Isaac's family is a plain old ordinary family. But what makes them different, may you think? What makes them so different? The answer is God alone makes them different. This is one of the saddest chapters in the Bible, especially in Genesis. One of the saddest chapters. You know, I was just speaking to the brethren here. In your reading regimen through the year, you might go through this story and, you know, you look at it, wow, it's an interesting story. But when you study this story, you see the sadness of this story. No one person in this family fares well tonight. Not one. Isaac is the second generation of the great patriarchs of the family of faith. The only difference between him and a pagan is the Lord of glory. That's all. God is the difference here. He took an ordinary man with his father Abraham and made him the father of the Jewish nation and also those who believe. His son Isaac is the heir, or the seed, as he's called in the Bible, through whom the covenant blessings and the promises will flow and will continue in. But that said, they are living in great sin in this story. He is living in great sin. Chapter 27 starts off after many years of silence. You know, sometimes we may not notice, we read from chapter 26 to 27 and we think, oh, this is the next day or something like that in our mind. But many years have gone by since chapter 26. This story is not happening in a vacuum. The sin we see in this story has been brewing for years, ever since these children were conceived, and even before that. Early on, before the twins were even born, God said a battle was brewing in Rebekah's womb. The older Esau of the twins comes out like a hairy garment. He had hair all over him, the Bible says. Jacob comes out grabbing his heel, trying to get out first. And that's what Jacob means, like a heel grabber or a deceiver. Comes out there. Right away, they are distinguished from one another. Esau's the hunter, the gatherer. He's out there hunting all the time. The man's man, as we would say today. Living in a tent. He goes from place to place hunting. But Jacob, some of your translations say he was mild or quiet. He was a quiet man, the Bible says. He can be seen even as a mama's boy. We might look at him as a mama's boy. We see this as he was a cook. His mother must have taught him how to cook well. Not that this is a bad trait or a feminine trait. Esau came in famished from the hunt and desired his stew. He must have been a good cook. Esau cared little for his birthright, as we saw in chapter 25. And Esau, in fact, sold his birthright for a pot of stew. Afterward, Esau even despised his birthright. He hated it that he even possessed it at one time. Isaac loved Esau, though, and Rebekah loved Jacob. The last time we met in chapter 26, we looked at Isaac's life in that chapter. God also reiterated that great covenant with Isaac in chapter 26. Things are moving very quick now, brethren. Before, things were slowing down. But things are moving at a fast pace now. But tonight, things are going to slow down to a crawl as we look at this story. But now in chapter 27, the battle continues. After many years have passed, as I just said, Isaac's now 137 years old, and he believes he is about to die. He's on his deathbed in his mind. But this isn't really so. So he wants to pass on the family blessing to his favorite son, Esau, right against God's will. This was the custom back then. At that time, as we see happen again at the end of Genesis, Joseph, if you remember the story, Joseph calls all of his sons together and prophetically gives them that last blessing. I think it's 49, chapter 49. So this thing is something they did back then. It was a custom that they did. But this was more than just a passing on of things, as we shall see. This was a prophetic blessing that Isaac wants to give to Esau. He's not just passing, okay, he's going to get the house and he's going to get the camel or whatever they had there. You know, the money's going to Esau. No, this was a prophetic blessing that Isaac wanted to bestow on Esau. Just like we'll see Jacob prophetically bless his sons, as I said, in chapter 49 later on, as he blesses the 12 sons. Only later on, it's done that all could see. It's done in the open, as we'll see in chapter 49. That blessing is given. Come on, sons, all gather around, and I'm going to bless you. And he blesses all of them one by one. But that's not what happens with this one. This one's done in secret, with the lights dark, things are dim. There's a big difference taking place in this story. Isaac wants to bless Esau in secret. This is the scene that starts off this story tonight. Although we can see, the battle has been brewing for a long year. Many, many years this battle has been going on. But tonight, this battle is going to come to its head in this story. Isaac knows very well that God had chosen Jacob to be the heir. He knew this to be the seed, as he's called. But nevertheless, Isaac is going against the Lord's plain out for all to see will here in this chapter. He's going to give his blessing to Esau instead of Jacob, he believes. As I just said, This was no regular blessing. Things were going to be given here. That's going to be given out here prophetically. It's more like a prophetically given last will and testament. But Isaac is giving it against God's will. We got to get that in our heads. That's how this scene starts off. This was Isaac's will that Esau get this prophetic blessing. And so we see the battle of the wills in chapter 27 in this story. The study tonight is called Man's Will and God's Will. The question is, whose will win? Please open up to chapter 27 of Genesis. This story is told in great detail. From a narrative standpoint, narrative means the story, like a true story in the Bible. From a narrative standpoint, time seems to slow down to a trickle. Everything's going to go in minute detail in this story. As we just seen between 26 and 27, maybe 50 years went by. But now time's going to slow down. And when the Bible does that, this is just a little hermeneutical jewel for you. When the Bible does that, pay attention. Because something's given there in great detail. That means theologically or whatever, there's something really strong in there. It's a good thing when you see this happen in your reading plan. Pay attention to this. We'll look at this chapter. We're going even a little bit bigger than a chapter in two large parts. The first section we'll look at man's will. And this is where we're going to dwell most of our time. Man's will. This covers verses 1 through 29 in this chapter, chapter 27. We'll spend most of our time here in the part looking at man's will. And secondly, chapters 27, verse 30 on through chapter 28, verse 9. As we'll look at the second section, we'll only touch briefly on this section and go directly to contrasting God's will and man's will. Here we see boldly that God's will be done. God's will be done. Moses, the narrator, opens up this story speaking about Isaac. Please follow along. This first scene covers verses 1 through 5. Follow along. Now it came to pass, when Isaac was old and his eyes were so dim that he could not see, that he called Esau his son and said to him, "My son." And he answered to him, "Here I am." Then he said, "Behold, now I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now therefore, please take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and make me a savory food, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now, Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau, his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt game and to bring it. As I said, Isaac's old, he's blind, he feels death at his door, right around the corner, and he calls his favorite son into the tent room. Some gather that Isaac thought he was about to die because he's totally blind. Maybe that's the reason he thinks he's going to die. Others believe it's because Ishmael, we could gather this from the text, Ishmael died at what age? 137 years old. Maybe he thinks, okay, he died. I'm about to die. I'm old. My eyes are going. I can't see. This was stated in chapter 29, verse 17. Where we see that Ishmael died at that age. Isaac is now at this age. He's 137 years old, and he's probably as blind as a bat, as they say. Taking both these things into account, he thinks death is near. It's going to come very shortly. And he wants to impart this prophetic blessing to his favorite son while he's able, in fact, to do this. The text told us the reason why he loves Esau. Few times in the thing. The son he loves because of the game that he caught for him to eat. This is declared in chapter 25 also in verse 28. Remember, this last blessing was the custom of the patriarchs. Isaac wanted his desire, he wanted his will to be done in this matter. He knows that Jacob was the heir. He was the seed by God. Amazingly, if you remember, back when we were looking at Abraham's life, Abraham also wanted the wrong son to get the blessing. He wanted Ishmael to be the heir. Abraham also loved the wrong child in that story and wanted him to be the heir. Remember, Abraham cried to the Lord in chapter 17, verse 18. He said, "Oh, that Ishmael may live before you." In other words, "Lord, please bless him. Please bless him." And the Lord did bless Ishmael at that time, as Abraham asked God to do. But it wasn't the covenantal blessing that Isaac thinks he's going to give Esau right now. No, that went to the true child, the true heir, Isaac. But in our story, there's none of that. There's none of that pleading to God, "God, would you bless Esau? I love him." No, nothing. He goes straight and does it himself. Isaac didn't seek the Lord as Abraham had done in the open. No, this is done in secret. At least from Isaac's standpoint, it's done in secret. It really was not in secret. Isaac allowed his fleshly desires and also his affections to drive his will to go against God, against God's decree and against God's will here. Isaac's letting his fleshly desires outweigh the Lord's sovereign will. Unbelievable. I believe Paul, please turn to Romans chapter 5. I believe Paul has a commentary on what's taking place here. In Romans chapter 5, Romans chapter 8, excuse me, verse 5 and 8. It says, Romans chapter 8, verse 5 through 8. "For those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh. But those who live according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Because the carnal mind is at enmity against God. For it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. So then, those who are of the flesh cannot please God." Isaac didn't love Esau because he was a holy man. Not at all. He didn't love Esau because he was sanctified to the Lord. No, he loved Esau because, the way the Bible explains it, because of game in his mouth is the exact way the Bible literally says this. Because of food in his mouth is why he loved this child. The text brings this out in our text tonight. In this section, savory meat is mentioned 6 times. You see how he dwells on the fleshly things. Mm-hmm. Savory meat is mentioned 6 times. Mm-hmm. Venison, which is the food he wanted, is mentioned 7 times. And eating is mentioned 8 times. His fleshly desires are mentioned 20 times in this chapter, in this section. Brethren, you can see where Isaac has his heart. It's on his belly. The blessing was totally out of line with the Lord's will. But before we move on, remember Isaac knows well that this prophecy was given to Rebekah back in chapter 25, verse 23, when God told her, the older would serve the young. And this was against the protocol of the day. The older was always the main child, the number one child. Still is today, as a matter of fact. He was well aware of Esau selling his birthright to Jacob. Esau had sold it for a measly bowl of stew, probably for a buck or something, if you want to think of it monetarily. In chapter 25, we see this. Isaac knew all of this, all well he knew this, but he still desires to go against the Lord's will and give it to Esau, his favorite son. On top of this, Esau, it says, and some people tie the ending of chapter 26 to this story. On top of this, it said Esau brought much grief upon Isaac and Rebekah. Why? Because he married outside of the covenant family. He married two Hittite women. Esau showed contempt for the covenant, for his birthright. He despised his background and his faith and even his family, I believe. So, let's move on to our second scene. and look at Rebecca's will in this story. Let's see what Rebecca's will is. This scene two covers verse 6 through 17. The scene involves, all of these scenes involve two people. First scene, Isaac and Esau. Now we're going to, this scene involves Rebecca and Jacob. Mm-hmm. Verse 6. So Rebecca spoke to Jacob, her son, saying, "Indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau, your brother, saying, bring me game and make savory food for me that I may eat and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Go now to the flocks and bring me from the two choice kids of the goats, and I will make savory food from them for your father, such as he loves. Then you shall take it to your father, that he may eat of it, and that he may bless you before his death." And Jacob said to Rebekah his mother, "Look, Esau my brother is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth-skinned man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to him to be a deceiver. And I shall bring a curse on myself and not a blessing." But his mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go get them for me." And he went and got them and brought them to his mother. And his mother made savory food, such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the choice clothes of her elder son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. She dresses him. And she put the skins of kids of the goats on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. Then she gave the savory food and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. What a scene. What an amazing scene. Rebecca hears what's going on. Tents are very thin. Even back then, when tents were probably made of animal, you know, like maybe camel skin or something. But tents today are very, very thin. Very, like, paper thin. Years ago, Geraldine and I were going to go rent one of these cottage houses down in Ocean Grove. And I remember it as plain as yesterday. I spoke to a person who had been living. Are you guys familiar with those tent houses they have in Ocean Grove? Are you guys familiar? They kind of, that's how Ocean Grove started. It started as a Christian tent or camp meeting. And they used to just have plain old tents. Well, to hold that kind of a feel, they actually have a tent city that they set up. Only it's your cottage is half, you know, wood, and then the tent part of it. So it's pretty much like being in a tent. They're beautiful, very beautiful to look at, and very cheap to stay in. And the tent city surrounds this big tabernacle in there. Beautiful old church there. It's gorgeous if you're ever in it. It looks like a big upside down boat. It's huge. We've seen Charles Stanley there years ago. Really beautiful place. But anyhow, I remember it like yesterday, standing there and talking to a lady. You know, you have to put in a piece of paper to see if your number would come up to rent these things. It's not easy. But I remember as if it's yesterday, a lady standing there and telling me about what it's like to live in this house. She said, "It's a standing room joke that if one sneezes in their house, you get 5 God bless yous. You get 2 from the houses on the side and 3 God bless yous from the 3 cottages behind you." That's how thin and close together these things are. So Rebecca knew something was happening. She's either in the next tent or in a partition there, and she hears what's going on and what's going to happen. Their great love affair, I believe, probably has waned. It's between Isaac and Rebecca at this time. They're probably very, this relationship is probably very, very cold. It's as if Isaac has the son named Esau. "This is my son," Isaac says. And Rebecca's has another son. His name is Jacob. "This is my son." Isaac, in fact, calls him his son. And Rebecca, in fact, calls him my son. This is how they speak of the two children. It's amazing. There's a real family division going on in this chapter, which makes it even more the pitiful of a chapter to behold taking place here. Real family division. Rebecca orchestrated this whole situation in this scene. But nevertheless, Jacob follows her every word, as we shall see. Rebekah commanded Jacob to follow her orders in verse 8. She says, obey my voice according to what I command you. She says, ani mitzvah. This is a term that many of us know. Mitzvah, that's, you know, workings or commandments. Obey, I command you. Ani mitzvah. Although Jacob has his doubts, he follows right along with what she says. And then in verses 11 and 12, Jacob raises the question, but what about if I get caught? So Isaac will curse Jacob, he says. He'll curse me instead of being blessing. But the mother answers in verses 13 and 14. The mother is so adamant about what she wants him to do. She says, let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go. Get them for me. This is one of the, I believe, the only times that you see a woman command somebody in the Bible. She's commanding him, you go do what I'm telling you to do. And Jacob answers with a staccato succession of verbs here in verse 14. It says, he went, he took, and he brought. Right before Jacob went in to trick his fathers in verses 15 and 17, it describes this amazing scene. It says, then Rebekah took the choice clothes of her elder son Esau, which were in her house, and put them on her younger son. See, it's called her son. And she put the skins around his hands and the smooth part of his neck even. Convinced the father. Can you imagine this scene? Try to visualize what's going on here. Here's skinny, puny Jacob dressed in Esau's best. He was probably a strapping man, a big hunter, dressed in Esau's clothes. They were probably falling all over him. They must have been huge, as I say. On top of that, she wraps goat skins around his arms and around his neck. Could you imagine the scene of what this looked like? It's comical. It's bizarre. It's a bizarre scene. It must have made. I can only imagine shaking in his brother's hunting boots, saying, this is never going to work, Ma. This is not going to work. But the story continues. The first scene involved Isaac and Esau. The second scene involved Rebekah and Jacob. Let us move on to the last scene of this first section. This scene involves now Isaac and Jacob disguised as Esau. In this last scene of this section, we see Jacob's will now. First we've seen Isaac's will, then we've seen Rebekah's will, now we're going to see Jacob's will before us. His deception is played out like a movie actor. He plays his sinful part very well here. Follow along, brethren, as I read. Verse 20, chapter 27, verse 18. So he, speaking of Jacob, went to his father and said, my father. And he said, here am I. Who are you, my son? Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done just as you told me. Please arise, sit, and take and eat of my game, that your soul may bless me. But Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have found it so quickly, my son? And he said, because the Lord your God brought it to me. Then Isaac said to Jacob, please come near that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not. He knows it's not Esau. So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him. And said, the voice is the voice of Jacob's. It's Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. It's funny. I never really... I went to see a doctor, and he had real hairy hands. I was telling him about this story, and I just read this and felt... It's funny. You really can't feel it. You know, you could get tricked, I think, you know, like doing this. You know, I mean, he was a real hairy guy, you know. He's funny, like, this is a pagan guy, and he's listening to stories, faces like this, you know, really, really sensing what's going on here. Okay, where are we? Where are we, brethren? What verse?
25.
He said, bring it to me that I will eat, of my son's game, so that my soul may bless you. So he brought it near to him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, come near now and kiss me, my son. Now he's probably really shaking in his boots. And he came near and kissed him. and he smelt the smell of his clothing and blessed him and said, surely the smell of my son is like the smell of the field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore, may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren. And let your mother's son, see how he's speaking about, in his mind, about Jacob? Let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those that bless you. Rebekah and Jacob had godly desires. We brought that out before, I believe, maybe even before you all came. But they go about it in a sinful way or a sinful manner. Mm-hmm. Jacob's dressed as his brother Esau in this comical outfit. He also has the goat skins wrapped around his hairless arms. And his hands are full of this spiced up goat. It must have smelled fabulous, that Rebekah had prepared. He's now ready to deceive his father, his blind father, on his deathbed. The deceiver walks into the tent, the darkened tent doorway. The blind old man asks him, who are you? Who are you? Lie number one comes forth. I am Esau, he says. Then he pauses and says, your firstborn son. Lie number two. Jacob says, I have done just as you told me. Lie number three. He never told him to do that. He then asks Isaac, arise, sit and eat of my venison, that your soul may bless you. Lie number four. This was no venison. This was a farm animal raised as a pet, probably. Four lies in straight succession to his father. If we thought that this was enough, now the mother of all lies comes, flows from his lips. In verse 20 he says, but Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have found it so quickly, my son? And he says, because the Lord your God brought it to me. Lie number five. Jacob says, Yahweh Eloheka. And he uses the two covenant names. The covenant name is Yahweh and the personal name of the Lord, Elohim. The Lord your God has brought this. Many say this is blasphemous language from Jacob. Isaac's eyes were very dim, but his ears were another thing here. He hears his voice of his, he thinks that Esau's there, he's being lied to, but he knows by hearing that it's Jacob. Secondly, Isaac wants to feel Esau to make sure it's really him. He wants to touch him. Jacob passes the test because of the goat skins wrapped around his arms. Then Isaac asks him, point blank, are you really my son? Before it was kind of hit and miss. How is this? Who are you? Are you really my son? And Jacob says, I am. One last time, Isaac calls him near before giving him the prophetic blessing. Now he uses the sense of smell and catches Esau's scent. He smells the field and the animals probably. Finally, the blessing flows forth. May God give you of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. This is a Hebrew idiom meaning great fertility. A Hebrew idiom meaning great fertility. This is seen in Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 28. Let the people serve you. Let the nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. And cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. The first part of this is the same promise that God gave to Rebekah in Genesis chapter 25, verse 23. It's a covenantal blessing. And then the second part of the cursing and the blessing is another promise that the Lord had given to Abraham back in chapter 12 when he just called him out of the land. But before we move on, brethren, to the second section and have a look at the Lord's will concerning this situation, concerning this blessing, let us dwell on what was taking place here and man's will briefly. This is not the Isaac we remember on Mount Moriah. Remember the Isaac we met? Father, wherever you go, I shall go. You will be the sacrifice. Father, never a word. submitting to the Lord's will fully back then in that chapter. Even unto death, he submitted to the Lord. Isaac was clearly going against the Lord's will for Esau's life in this story. Isaac is behaving like the one who would declare, "Let my will be done. Let my will be done." But what are we to say about Esau? Is he victimless in this story alone? No, not at all. He has little on his mind concerning the things of God. Anything about God, he has little on his mind. He cared little for his birthright, as we've seen in a previous story. He knew that Jacob, his brother, was the heir. He knew it. So he was a thief, as a matter of fact, in this story. It's thievery. But he nevertheless went along with this secret plan of his father to get the blessing. He knew he had no right to have. Esau can also say boldly, "Let my will be done." Rebecca thinks she's doing a godly thing. Maybe in her mind she has it all planned out. "I'm doing a godly thing. I got to get this. This belongs to Jacob. I got to do anything I can do here." But she's going about it in a very sinful way. As I said, usurping her husband, making her son dress up in this comical outfit. If he would have got caught, who knows what would have happened. The bottom line is she has no trust at all in the Lord in this story to fulfill his purposes. Not an iota. Jacob the deceiver follows right along with his mother in this story. Lie on top of lie, dressed as his brother in this comical outfit he had on, making the Lord even his accomplice in this story. The Lord, your God, he made this all successful. Come on, Dad, give me the blessing. This is all sinful and very, very sad, brethren. Well, let us finish the text for tonight and look at the Lord's will in this situation. Verse 30. Now it happened, as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac, his father, that Esau, his brother, came in from the hunting. He also had made savory food and brought it to his father and said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that your soul may bless me." And his father Isaac said, "Who are you?" So he said, "I am your son, your firstborn Esau." Then Isaac trembled exceedingly and said, "Who? Who? Where is the one who hunted game and brought it into me? I ate all before you came, and I have blessed him, and indeed he shall be blessed." When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me, father. But he said, "Your brother came in with deceit and has taken away your blessing." And Esau said, Is he not rightly named Jacob?" Meaning the deceiver. "For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now look, he has taken away my blessing." And he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Then Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Indeed, I have made him your master, and all his brethren I have given to him as servants. With grain and wine I have sustained him. What shall I do now for you, my son?" And Esau said to his father, "Have you only one blessing, my father? Bless me. Me also, O my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. This could also be translated, wept bitterly. Then Isaac his father answered and said to him, "Behold, your dwelling place," here's the blessing, "your dwelling place shall be of the fatness of the earth." Or maybe a better translation would be "from the fatness of the earth." In other words, he ain't getting the fatness of the earth. Away from the fatness of the earth and of the dew of the heaven from above. "By your sword you shall live. You shall serve your brother, and it shall come to pass when you become restless that you shall break his yoke from your neck." So Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him, and the yoke from blessed him and yoke from your neck. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." And the words of Esau her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice, arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved also of you both in one day?" And Rebekah said to Isaac, "I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife," she's trying to play on Isaac now. "If Jacob takes a wife from the daughters of Heth, like these who are the daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me?" Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him, chapter 28, and charged him and said to him, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Haran, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there and the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may be an assembly of peoples, and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and to your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham." So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Padan Haran, to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram, to take himself a wife from there, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan," and that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Padan Haran. And also Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please his father Isaac. May the Lord bless the reading of the word here. Jacob scurried out with the blessing that his father had just given him. And Esau enters with the dinner in hand, ready for the blessing that never belonged to him and was never his to receive. When Esau walked into the tent, Isaac had a rude awakening. His awakening was so feral that some actually believe this is the point of his conversion. A literal translation of that verse, where it says he trembled, may be said like this: he trembled with a great trembling greatly. The superlatives of that. In other words, his poor old frame of a body trembled like that of a great earthquake within. What was happening to Isaac is he's having a rude awakening from many years of a spiritual stupor. Isaac was now a man suddenly alive with spiritual realities. He's horrified at what he tried to do against the Lord's decree in that story. He had acted in the flesh, and the Lord just simply overruled him, totally. With this knowledge, he's shaken to the very depths of his being, and that verse brings that out wonderful. Isaac then says, submitting to the Lord's will, when he says, "Indeed, he shall be blessed." The Lord's will was done despite all of their sinfulness. But this doesn't make what each had done any better, that the Lord's will was done. Not one bit. Esau's sins had increased in the sense that now he wants to kill his brother. Before he might have disliked him, now he wants him dead. He also takes more women to be his wives. He's increasing his harem on the negative in this section. But on the positive, Isaac is transformed, and he is now very remorseful at what he tried to do against the Lord's will. But the repercussions to this are nevertheless very great. Rebekah, for her part, sends away the child that she loved, never to see him again. She thinks she's going to send away and get him back in a couple of days. She never saw him again. Jacob has to leave the promised land. This is his repercussion. He sojourns in a foreign land for some 20 years. 20 years for what he had done. Jacob has to leave the wealth of his household. This was a rich household. He also leaves the leadership of the covenant family, and he leaves in poverty, and he lives in poverty for years to come. Finally, he pays for his deception dearly by being deceived himself by his uncle Laban. He deceives him more than once, as we shall see. He becomes deceived, Jacob. The deceiver gets deceived. Brethren, there are consequences to our sin. And may I add, prior to conversion and even afterward. God finally broke Isaac's self-will and also Jacob's self-will in this story. Brethren, God wants to do the same in your lives. He wants to do the same in you also. Think for a moment. What are the areas in your life where you may be pursuing godly things in an ungodly manner? In an ungodly manner. And if we think deeper, maybe not even deeply, we're going to come up with some things very quickly. What are you trying to pursue? Godly things in an ungodly manner. Dwell on that, brethren, for them. You know, tonight, tomorrow. God will transform you evermore into His image. The question is, will it take an episode like this to transform you? What happened here? Or will you heed the lesson learned that God had put in this chapter for all in this epic story to see? Please, my brother, my sister, don't learn the hard way. God will make you into His image one way or another. Don't learn the hard way. Learn the easier way. Is God speaking to you right now? I know He spoke to me when I was putting the study together deeply. He spoke to me. The Lord's will be done in our lives. It's a matter of how we're going about it. God is sovereign, and His decrees shall stand. Mm-hmm. Sometimes God uses secondary means to achieve this, like we see in this chapter. Like Moses, when he sinned and killed that Egyptian. Mm-hmm. I spoke about that before some of you came. Moses killed an Egyptian. This was a sinful and ungodly act. But God used this to teach Moses to be a shepherd of people. He literally became a shepherd, and he became a shepherd of many people, which led to the great shepherding of the people as they left Egypt to set his people free. We see the same later on in Genesis. Many of us know Joseph's brothers sold him into slavery and tricked Jacob even into thinking that he was dead. He's dead. We have Joseph's words recorded in chapter 50 that tell us the truth. Genesis 50, verse 20 says, "But as for you," speaking to the brothers who sold their brother into slavery and tricked the father saying that he was dead, he said, "But as for you, you meant evil against me." This is Joseph speaking. "But God meant it for good, in order to bring about, as it is this day, to save many people." Joseph, you know, was prophetically given the dream, and he stored away all of that grain. He saved millions of people, probably. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. See, sinful acts brought about by men, but God uses it for His sovereign will. Again, sinful motives by men, but it also was the will of God. This is a great mystery, brethren, that I don't plan on explaining to you right now. How this works out. That they did all of that trickery, and yet it's the Lord's will. You know, these are the mysteries of the Word. The ultimate example of this is found in the New Testament. The Jewish people and leaders, the kings and even the Gentiles, all plotted to kill Jesus that day on Calvary. They all plotted. They all willfully did this, and, may I add, they paid for it. But what does Peter say? Turn to Acts chapter 4. What does Peter say about this story that happened? Acts chapter 4, verse 26 through 28. Acts chapter 4, verse 26 says, "The kings of the earth took their stand, and the rulers were gathered together against the Lord and against His Christ," or against His anointed. For truly against your holy servant Jesus, whom you anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate, with the Gentiles and the people of Israel, were gathered together to do whatever your hand and your purposes determined before to be done. So you see what this is saying? Mm-hmm. These people sold the Lord into hanging on the cross that day. But it was the determined will of God that he hang on that cross. Mm-hmm. Deep mystery, brethren. Mm-hmm. God in his ordinary providence makes use of means. What I mean by means is like this. He uses things. Makes use of his providence. Sometimes that means our sinful desires. Our sinful nature. But that doesn't make God the author of sin. See, here's where this thing really gets tricky. Well, if you're saying God did this, is he the evil one behind this? No, not at all. It doesn't make God the author of sin. It's by our sinful will. We desire to do these sinful things and these sinful ways. But God's will be done. God is the Lord of all. God's ultimate will and plan is fulfilled in spite of Isaac's will in this story. God's ultimate will and plan is fulfilled in spite of Rebecca and Jacob's wicked scheme that they put on here. And I believe this text wants to show you two things. First, God's will is fulfilled in spite of mankind's wicked, willful ways. God's will is fulfilled in spite of mankind's wicked, willful ways. How often do we think that God's will never get done unless we help something out here? We gotta go do something. God's will never get done unless I do this. I have a ministry I want to fulfill. You know, we talk ourselves and we trick ourselves into lying. Got to get the word to this country. We thieve, we steal, we make missions look grander than they are, maybe to raise monies to do these kind of things. All for good, godly things. The word, we want the word to go on. But if you listen to some of these things, it's crazy. Crazy. In this text tonight, we are reminded that God's will be done in spite of man's will. Please turn to John chapter 1. This reminds me of the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 12 and 13. Speaking of the fact that many of Jesus' own people did not receive him, Jesus goes on to say in verse 12, "But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God. To those who believe in him, in his name, who were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God." If we had our own willful way, none of us would ever be saved. None of us. Me, nobody. Our will is dead set against God and His. Our will is set on our fleshly desires. Even, you know, people do search for God. They're going for God, but it's a God of their imagination, a God of their, you know, they create this. Whatever it may be, Buddha, you know, Shinto, whoever, even atheism, that's a religion also. Our will is dead set against God and His ways and set on our fleshly desires. Before God's will works in our hearts are as stone. Only then can you see God when He quickens you and awakens you, like it says here in it. Chapter 1, for who he really is, you can see God. I remember me, it was as plain as one day, had no godly desire at all, woke up the next day, and was like, what happened? I got to hear the gospel. It was literally that, like that with me. You know, great picture of God's sovereignty working in the human heart in my life. And secondly, God wants to teach us through this story of his grace. His amazing grace. Jacob, just like Esau before him, who received the covenant promises, was the product of God's undeserved, unmerited favor. God's unconditional election. That's how Abraham was saved. This passage is all about God's undeserved favor. It's about his grace. Isaac himself received the blessing and the promises because of God's love, it said, for Abraham. We saw that in chapter 26. The same goes for Jacob. God tells us in Romans chapter 9, verse 11. He loved him before he had done anything. It's not by works. And that verse says, Romans chapter 9, 11 says, for the children not yet being born, nor having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand. Not by works, but of him who calls, speaking of God. It's that God's election might stand. So brethren, please learn a godly lesson from this text tonight. Not thy will, but God's will. Not thy will, but God's will. You can whitewash so many things. So many things in our minds to do right. You could whitewash. You may even convince yourself you're following God and God's will in your life. You may be 100% convinced. But brethren, think hard. Are you doing it in a godly manner? I'm not saying don't desire those things, but are you doing it in a godly manner? Or an ungodly manner? Are you seeking to promote whatever you do, whatever it is? I could say schooling, I could say, you know, whatever, pastorate, I could say whatever you all do, plumbing, Jay, whatever you want to do. Are you seeking to promote whatever you do in a righteous way or an ungodly manner is the question. Rebekah and Jacob might have convinced themselves, this is God's will. I got to get the blessing. He's going to give it to Esau. We got to hurry. We got to get in there. It's going. Come on. We got to go. Do this. But look what happened to them. They all are written about in God's holy Bible for the whole world to see what they had done. Their sinful ways. People have been reading about this story for thousands of years. Isaac had to learn the hard way, but God's grace did in fact get upon him, and he did learn. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 20, it says, by faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning the things of God. It says, by faith. And that doesn't mean the shenanigans that went by. It was when he said, indeed, he shall be blessed, is what this is talking about. When he finally trembled from within. Whoa, what in the world did I do? You ever have a moment like that? What did I do? That. And he said, indeed, he shall be blessed. I thought I was blessing the wrong one, but indeed he shall be blessed. In the end, he told Esau and us, and he will be blessed. Speaking about Jacob. Jesus himself, while on earth, prayed this prayer, that his Father's will be done. Matthew 26, verse 42. Again, a second time, he went up and prayed, saying, oh, my Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me, unless I drink it, your will be done. Brethren, may you say this day and every day of your life, let your kingdom come, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Matthew 6:10. And Isaiah 56, verse 1 and 2 say, thus says the Lord, keep justice and do righteousness. Blessed is the man who does this and keeps his hand from doing any evil. Please, brethren, keep this on the forefront of your mind. Father, not my will, but thy will. Let your kingdom come. Let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Amen.